You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, director, producer, Gladden Ranger. How are you, Gladden?
Good. A little tired, but I'm good. How about yourself?
Man, I first got to ask you about your name. Your name is awesome. Gladden Rangel. Tell me about
Rangel, Rangel. Look, I don't have a good enough relationship to my father to tell you the right way to say it.
That's all right. No, it's cool.
But and what's interesting is I haven't gone by Gladden my entire life until now, and it's my actual name. It's my dad's name, and I didn't really have much of a great relationship with him, and I was always used to hearing, you know, his name in a negative context, and I just never claimed it. And I went by my middle name, which is Edward. I was just called Eddie my entire life. All my friends know me as Eddie. And it's only been recently that I've kind of like gone on this mission of sort of reclaiming my name, which it's weird. People call me Gladden. I'm like, who? What? But like, yeah, I'm a little too old to be having an identity crisis, I feel like, but you know.
It's awesome. I think it's really awesome. And it's like, it makes you super unique. And the other thing too is my real name's Nikhil. Everybody knows me as Nikki, but my real name's Nikhil. And I had the same kind of like instance, not with a bad relationship with my dad or anything, but I have a great relationship with my dad, but I had an identity crisis with my name when I was younger. And it was like the name that every substitute teacher stumbled on, you know, growing up. And everybody knew me as Nikki. My parents call me Nikki. You know, it's like my friends call me Nikki. But when it came time to be a professional musician, and it was like, what is the name going to be? Do I change it? Do I conform? I was like, no, this is the name I was given. And there's something about claiming the name that you were given that shows confidence, boldness. It shows authority. It shows humility at the same time. And I think there's power that you grasp when you kind of claim that name. So I think it's awesome. That's why I had to ask. It's such a cool name.
And it means what it says, Gladden, like they were gladdened by his presence, you know? So I'm trying to embody what that means, but yeah, I got picked on from that name too. Everyone knew me as Eddie. When a substitute teacher came, everyone was like, Gladden, you know, right. Who's Gladden? Don't get mad, get Gladden, Gladden Aladdin, you know, like just endless, you know. By the way, can I cuss on here? Is that okay? Should I try to? Okay, good.
You can say shit, fuck, and all of it, yes.
Great. Endless fucking bullshit about my name growing up. And also, like I said, I just had a sort of, I'm not even going to say painful, but just maybe indifferent and negative relationship with my biological. So like, he has been in my life for quite some time. And it's an interesting, I guess, personal challenge to embody a name and start over and give it a different story, I guess.
Well, you're a very good soul, so that's to his, you know, misfortune that he doesn't know who you are as you are, because yeah, every time I've had an exchange with you, it's always been a very soulful, cool connection. So I just, like, you know, I respect you as a person and an artist, and I think everybody that comes in contact with you probably has the same vibe. But let's talk about how you growing up real quick. Where did you grow up? And what is your ethnicity? Just so our can know.
Yeah, it's all complicated. All of that. All the answers are complicated. Because I don't have a clear ethnicity. And I don't have a very simple upbringing, I would say. I'm the eldest of eight kids from my mom.
Wow. Wow.
And, and she had me when she was pretty young. She was 18 when she had me. In the 80s, I'm older than I look. Blackish, don't crackish.
True.
And my parents were young. My dad was in his 20s. My mom was a teenager basically. And I grew up all over California, but mostly in Southern California, mostly in San Diego, LA, a little bit of the Bay, a little bit of the IE, mostly just, custody battles going back and forth with my dad and traveling. My mom was pretty central, but my upbringing was, like I said, there was custody battles. And then after custody battles, there was group homes. And then after group homes, I just left home. And I've kind of been on my own in one way or another since I was a teenager, and this isn't to discredit, my mother and, her support. It was just things were difficult, and she had a lot to deal with. That, and I think human beings only have the capacity to handle so much. And especially because, it's kind of like when you have a parent that young, you're growing up together. And I think that parents and kids always kind of grow up together in a certain sense, because I think we unlock like a certain level of maturity from our parents. But for me and my mom, it was very pronounced in that way. And she found out she was adopted when she turned 30, and so her entire lineage, backstory, everything that she knew, kind of collapsed, and in terms of ethnicity, my mom's black. I grew up in black neighborhoods. I grew up with black grandparents who were very old. My grandma Berta was born in 1926, and Grandpa Jesse, who I never got to meet, was born in 1910.
Wow.
So yeah, you got to imagine that. Like that's a person who, like, as a child, probably knew enslaved people personally. You know what
Yes.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So for my mom, I think, she was raised by elder black people who were like, the children of sharecroppers, and that definitely translated to the way that she dealt with us kids.
Right.
But so like half of I'm black, and then my dad is a Latin and European mutt. And I got a 23andMe done recently because I've been trying to find my mom's birth parents. And it's just a whole gang of stuff.
Right.
Like I'm 30% sub-Saharan African. It turns out my mom's 25% European, like stuff that I didn't even know. So like culturally, yeah, I'm a hodgepodge.
But that, you know what? That's you're kind of an important person in the world right now because you are the blend of so many different cultures. And the fact that you're making films about cultures that are being persecuted and, kind of being challenged in a lot of ways is kind of a beautiful thing. It shows that you have a tremendous amount of compassion, and it shows that you come from a background that, you're well versed in cultures, and that way you kind of have an open mind about acceptance of other cultures, which is something that is so important, especially in this country right now. So I think it's a timely thing that you're making a movie like you did right now, and what you represent as a person with this mix of cultures, it's interesting.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because most of my pursuits were a response to different pressures in my life. And if I think about, it all started with me with music, and for me, being like a kind of a homeless street kid, I went towards the alternative. I was a punk, I was a goth, and then when electronic music kind of came to be. Because I didn't really grow up with very much stability, but I was always interested in music and I wanted to contribute to the conversation. I got really into like the industrial kind of scene because I was like, hey, I can make music on a computer by myself without a band, and that very much represented my path. And also, in the beginning of the rise of electronic music to its current heights, which I think it's kind of it's kind of lost a lot of, I think, what drew me to it, in that it was like very like desegregated and weird, and it didn't matter who the hell you were, you know what I mean? Everybody was welcome, you know? And that's the conversation that I got into. And I think my entire life I've kind of been looking for universalities in things, like kind of like what the forces are that transcend identity in a sense. And I don't think that I ever intentionally did that really, but it's just kind of what has resonated with me and where certain things have taken me. Where with even with this film and my work in film, you know, this is a film based around music because I feel like music is a universal language. I think that before we are creatures of spoken word, we are creatures of tone, right? Like mother sings a lullaby to a baby to calm it down. As babies, we have no vocabulary, but we understand the tone, you know? And I think in these times of such incredible division, that finding out what those universal things are, you know, in this time where we've taken postmodernism to its absolute limits, you know what I mean? Online is everything is swimming in slop. You know, it's hard to know where the guardrails are for what's real. And so I'm really blessed and fortunate, I guess, to gravitate towards those universal things because I've never had much stability or gravity in my own. So on my own. So it's just like looking for those things and then in the process sharing them.
But what's really interesting, though, is Gladden, and I've met you and hung out with you maybe 5 to 10 times, and you are a solid person. And it's shocking for me to hear that you went through so much adversity, and you're telling me that it's hard for you to find the guardrails, because it's like every time I've seen you or hung with you, you are a confident person, you are a very soulful person, and I think you're a guardrail for people in a lot of ways. And I think that it's interesting to hear that part of your story. But I think having gone through that adversity is what compels a person to become their own guardrails. So I think you've become your own guardrail. I would think you would agree with that.
I would like to think so. You know, the thing about it is, I'm gonna mess up a lot. You know, I don't want to pretend, because I think so many people, there are so many stories of people triumphing through adversity, and you only hear the good parts. You know what I mean? Like you only hear how they had this ironclad will and sense of morality, and you know, were perfectly formed people in adverse situations. No, I got my ass kicked by life all the way up and down in as many ways as possible, and it's a blessing, because I think if I would have gotten what I wanted at any point before now, would have been a real piece of shit.
Well, what's
You
interesting,
know.
made a very tender movie, and like it's such a delicate yet strong piece about humanity and like what we do as far as people. Like, I mean, I was like, you had these great sweeping shots of like the effects of war, of these like blown up tanks, and you have this like young, pretty girl playing the bandura for soldiers on the front lines of the Ukrainian war with Russia. And it just makes you stop in your tracks. I mean, honestly, the whole time I was watching it, you know, and I've been doing music my whole life, I was like, it puts so much perspective for me as a musician, like in a different place, because it's like this girl is doing a serious, serious amount of soul work for humanity. And you know, it's like I'm just trying to write songs and play them for people and reach people, and it's like she's doing like God's work, or she's doing the universe's work, or whatever you want to call that call for peace and that call for, like, you know, remembering your roots and remembering what you're fighting for. And it just put a tremendous amount of like respect for a musician like that, to be so young and to have that daunting task to be asked, would you mind coming to the front lines of this war to play for the soldiers and go to these barracks and remind them of what they're fighting for. I mean, I've got chills just talking to you about it, because what a powerful concept. Tell me how you came to this place of making this film.
Let me take a step back, because I think you'll find this interesting, because our mutual social connection is our friend Adam Stone.
Yes. He's been on the show before. We love Adam.
Really? Yeah. So I met Adam because he was interested in making some kind of content, film or TV show, based on a life experience that I had. And many producers had contacted me about this, and Vice did an article about it, did a podcast about it. But long story short, and it ties into all of this, about 10 years ago, at the height of my DJ pursuit, was booked to play this club opening in Mexico, and we were attacked by some, some of the local, element. I'm not going to say too much. And the person who attacked us died.
Wow.
Yeah. And, to put it more directly, it was a case of self-defense where someone broke in, we defended ourselves. And I put this assailant into a chokehold, and, he passed out, left. I came back, and he didn't wake up. Basically.
Wow.
Yeah. So, that experience led me through a wondrous tour of the Mexican criminal justice system. And
what that was like.
It's a whole other type of radio show right there. Right. But, the long story short is, a Mexican prison isn't what most people would imagine a prison to be, at least not where I was at in Topeka. It was in a Topeka State prison called Venustiano Carranza. It's like a big, it was like a colonial fort that was designed to only hold like maybe 500 prisoners. But at the time that I was there, there was like 3,000 prisoners.
Wow.
So the prison itself spilled out into the yard, and people built like shacks and shanties, along the walls of the prison. So what you had is this like city in between walls and presided over by gun towers, basically. And it functioned the way that a city would, had shops, it had churches, and it had art. It had musicians. There was people there. And this changed my life probably forever. There were people there who were some of the most incredible musicians you could imagine.
Yeah, I have
who were playing music just because it was a part of who they were. You know what I mean? No one, they would never play their music for 3 years, probably for the rest of their life in a lot of cases. The system's just so corrupt, and it just swallows people. I mean, it's corrupt here too, but also there.
Especially in a second or third world country,
And it's a cartel run racket. They're pretty liberal to their people, but everybody else, like, I can go on and on. But I had a lot of come to Jesus moments during that time, because I think that was the height of just my egotism, because I had realized that so much of my pursuit as an electronic music producer and DJ was for validation, was for attention, was to get something externally from people that I felt like I was missing. And it wasn't, as much as I enjoyed the music, and that's what had initially brought me into music production, the game of it, the making it part of it, I think had consumed the actual passion. And I was around these people who that part of it, the ambition, didn't exist, couldn't exist,
Right.
And so, I was like, oh, I thought I was a musician, but what am I compared to this pure raw expression that I'm seeing from these people who are just playing their guitars for the dirt and for the walls, and so I left that experience, which is a whole, like I said, Adam was going to make a movie about it, and, Adam was very encouraging to me because a lot of people heard about that experience when I got out. A lot of producers hit me up. I had a lot of meetings, with various producers, and I would somehow talk myself out of potentially lucrative deals because I had too much to say about it. Like, I think this is the subtext, and we should talk about this. Adam was the first guy to be like, "Hey, man, I think you could do this yourself. I think you could write this film yourself. I'll read your drafts. I'll help you out." And through fate, we became roommates during that process, which was, I lived, I rented a room at his place, on Floyd Terrace over there in,
Yeah, that place is.
That place was sort of a vortex. It was interesting. But you're going through this process of teaching myself screenwriting, and it's like unlocking this new sort of ability and perspective and way of expressing myself. I think like a whole new world of possibilities came to me of like, wow, screen media, like I've never thought in this way. Because I fucking hate film people.
Right.
Really do. I don't like film people. They always seem kind of shaky and pretentious, and like I've never had bad experiences with people in the film world, to be completely honest. Adam at the time, I think he was president of
Understandably so, too. Understandably so.
I don't mean to really hate on people. I've had bad experiences in that world.
Right.
Anyway, it was during the process of writing my story, which I wrote a pilot of, and I got a lot of good reads on it and whatever, whatever. Could not escape those mariachis, those flamenco players, those musicians in that prison. And I had come out with this sort of like this trauma and this worldview that was really hard to superimpose onto an LA like life, you know what I mean? Onto like a Hollywood lifestyle. I'd like seen too much, in a weird way. Like there's such thing as having too much personal lore where you can't relate to anybody.
Right.
So it was like, how do I use this? And this idea kind of found me because I don't want to even say I came up with it. It was just like it's weird. I feel like a lot of times, creativity is this external force that we just sort of we tune our antennas to, whether intentionally or not, by circumstance, to be able to pick up certain things that just exist out there.
Yes.
And kind of what came to me was, wouldn't it be cool if there was like a show that focused on musicians living in different conflict regions or just misunderstood places in the world? And we were able to learn about these places that we see in the news through musicians, because, and I definitely, this has been hammered into me since returning to Ukraine and validated in certain ways. And that is that, conditions like war are so reductive and dehumanizing. Like you either see somebody in, a condition of war, on your social media feed or on the news, and you think like those poor people, or you think like those brave people, whatever. You don't think who that person is. They lose their identity in that, And so just had this idea and I shared it with Adam. And Adam, he's like, he'll rock with you on something. Like he's just like, yeah, totally. I know this person's do this, and came up with a deck. And the idea was to go and find places, people in these conflict regions, tell their story and the story of like where they're from. And not necessarily just conflict regions, just misunderstood places, right? And then take their music and pair them with an established, like Western or mainstream kind of artist for these cool cross-cultural collaborations and conversations at the end. Like you're with an artist in their wherever it is, whether it's Ukraine or Palestine or, Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, wherever it is, and you're getting this storytelling perspective that I think is very ancient to humanity. Bards and troubadours and kobzars like Ina is in my film.
What connects us, it's like what connects us to the here and the now too, that sense of storytelling.
Totally. And also there's no spin, you know? I think that like when you can feel something the way that you feel something with music, it bypasses a lot of like your biases in a way, you know? Like it just it, a truth is transmitted on those signal waves, you know, and you feel it. Because I mean, you saw my movie and like I feel like you could speak Korean, you could speak Japanese, you can speak, you know, whatever, but you still know exactly what this girl's saying, you
Yes.
know?
Not only that too, it's also the tenderness, I would say, is so important for everybody to feel. Like you can't not feel a young girl playing for soldiers fighting for their families, a song from their childhoods that they're all singing. You know what I mean? It's like you can't paint a more like insanely beautiful picture, and that's also riddled with all these outside politics and, you know, bullshit things that kind of circulate what is war when, like, the basic humanitarian part of why we exist is that level of communication. It's like, this is what it's about, you know? It's so that's what made it so powerful. It's like, you cannot not understand it, you have to, you know?
Sure. And, you know, kind of like a different topic here, but leaving Ukraine and coming back to the United States, I was traumatized for completely different reasons than you would expect. I was traumatized being here in the US with so much division, with so much, you know, I came back, you know, during an election year and just like all of the just weird, like, vitriol coming from both sides, and walking around the streets of LA and seeing like how stark the living conditions are for people, and just seeing how like we are so whipped by like the psyops, whatever you want to call it, that keep people at each other's throats, to where it was existentially depressing, because I thought, man, is what holds us together, is the strongest force for humanity, the idea of an outsider or an enemy? Is that what brings people closer together than love, than you know, empathy or the needs for other people? And in these times now, it's even more of an existential sort of conflict that I have, because we're living definitely in an era of might makes right, you know, power speaks more than any other force. And I think the world that you and I grew up in is at stake, really. We don't know if it's going to exist, you know? So I think, yeah.
Comes back to love. It comes back like, but it goes through these weird trials of like, what does it matter? What does it mean? You know, like, and that's what we're in. We're in this, you know, it's kind of like if enough people speak about something, eventually enough people will believe it. And I think
Sure.
any part of that can be positive or negative, depending on who starts the conversation or who's the loudest in the conversation. So it's just
Yeah.
we're vibrating with is so much about like where we are, you know?
Totally. And you know, beyond that, like, you know, I feel like even though the times now are scary, there are certain fundamental truths. And there are certain inflection points that humanity has to go through in order to reach beyond into a new level or whatever. But in terms of our divisions, you know, if Russia invaded the United States today, I really do not think there would be a cohesive American identity. I think
Right.
half the people, whatever, let's say it's not Russia, whoever, right? Like, I don't think we're the same America that we were after 9/11. Right, where like everybody was like, you know, let's come together against these, you know, we got sold in all these wars. I think that capitalism is not a strong enough force to form an identity around, you know. And you know, coming back to the United States after being in Ukraine and dealing, like me, I'm there in a war zone, right? I know I'm getting a taste of what it's like to be under siege all the time with drones and ballistic missiles and, the weaponry and machinery of total war against a civilian population, I got to come back and hear like, well, if it wasn't for NATO and like, it's all a money laundering scheme. And just like, the level of of cognitive dissonance and just separation from the reality. It's like, oh yeah, cool. So they should definitely have their children killed then, right? Like because of NATO, Russia should be murdering and kidnapping children. That's cool. That's cool.
What I wanted to ask you is like, how did this project come into the light? Like, did you hear about this girl's music? Did you go to Ukraine first? Like, what was the spark that led you to making this film?
So it's a combination of things, but I came up with the idea that I just shared with you. It was called Chords, a decade ago, and it was just always on my mind, and I was always looking for a way to make some version of it happen, And I think my motivation had a lot to do with being a person who's always felt, in a sense, displaced, and gone through kind of extreme things to where like, hey, maybe I can relate to people in war zones making music, more than I can relate to like your average, underground DJ or whatever, And a bunch of things lined up at the right time in a really sort of serendipitous and strange way. Adam, it's kind of interesting because I've benefited more from the resources that ricochet off of Adam than our direct collaborations. I hope he hears that.
He'll love it. He'll respect that. He'll respect that. He'd be like, yeah.
Totally will.
Yes.
But he had a friend named Aaron Kaufman who came to town. It was like maybe August of 2023. And Aaron passed away recently, actually. But Aaron had just made a film with Sean Penn in Ukraine called Superpower. And that film has a really interesting story because him and Sean Penn were just like, isn't it weird that the president of Ukraine was an actor who played a normal guy who became the president, right? Isn't that weird? Let's follow this guy. Which, who knows what that real story is, whatever. And so they did. And as they're profiling Zelensky's cabinet, Russia invades. So yeah, they had this really interesting inside look, inside this war as it was unfolding in the early days. So Aaron came to LA with a dude named Artem, who he's part of the Ukrainian Cultural Ministry and works in film. And they're just like, yo, you got anything we can do? I have this guy, this Ukrainian guy, we're in LA for a little bit. And so we're like, oh, let's take him to go hang out with our friend Mark Batson. I don't know if you ever met Mark.
Yeah,
He's
but I know him. Yeah.
just amazing, super producer, super talented, multi-platinum, behind like so many different artists, right? But he's a friend of ours. And he was having like a little album release type thing. And so we all went there and hung out, and like I just was kind of talking to them about my idea. And when the Ukraine war, when they annexed Crimea, when the Russians annexed Crimea, it was 2014. That was right when I was getting out of jail in Mexico. So, like, I get out of jail, right? And I'm just looking at the world, and like just all these crazy things that happened, and just how absurd it is that we have these media feeds where, like, you scroll, you're like, oh, a girl's butt, somebody's breakfast, children blowing up in some massacre. Like, it's just weird scrambled eggs.
Right.
So Ukraine was in the forefront back then. And then when the full-scale invasion happened in 2022, a lot of Ukrainian friends, I have a lot of Russian friends as well who are not pro-Russian, close friends of mine who were really heavily affected by it. But if I'm being honest, I didn't do like a ton of research or anything. I was more going after like a personal feeling that I and something that I wanted to explore, right? So anyway, They were talking about it and what it's like in Ukraine, and I told them to talk about my idea, and they're like, yeah, come, I'm sure we can figure something out if you came, blah, blah, blah. At that same time, I got a gig just doing sound for a web series for the Luckman Fine Art Theater. They do like this intimate concert series called Sessions, Luckman Sessions. And they had a budget to fly to Spain to cover the Spanish National Ballet and this flamenco artist named Montse Cortez, and I got hired to do sound. I'd never been to Europe before. It was great, and they were going to pay me a bunch of money. It was like nothing like this ever happening before, right? And so I thought, like, okay, since I'm here, I'm going to go to Ukraine. At the same time, I met this girl in a screenwriters group. She was this Franco-Polish writer director, and we became close and like fell into this like whirlwind romance. And she was from Paris, and I should have seen the signs then that she was like very love bomby and whatever, whatever. But it was the first time I'd probably ever fallen in love as an adult,
Cool.
yeah. And so, I was supposed to record this thing in Madrid and then meet this girl in Paris. And we do the recordings in Spain, and I fly to Paris, and the girl never shows up. Yeah. And a mutual friend of ours showed up and who didn't have very good things to say about her. And the whole thing kind of fizzled out while I was in Paris, and it was so heartbreaking because I didn't get like a clean explanation. She just kind of ghosted. And I found out later that she just, she pursued this music video director who had a crush on her and was offering her opportunities and, chose the social ladder, But I didn't know any of that. I just knew that like it was like abandoned in Paris, and like I fucking hate that city because of that story.
Of course, as anyone would.
Paris is like a fucking shopping mall shoved inside of a crypt, like that's how I felt about it. Everyone, and the girl that I was with, like my friend, she was like, "It's romantic here," and I was like, ugh. But anyway, the reason why I think that holds some weight is because I don't think I've ever been that destroyed from all everything that I've been through in my life, from foster system to homelessness to imprisonment in a foreign country. I've never felt like that. Just sinking, painful, unceasing sort of torment of my heart. And I fucking hate to say it, but I think when I did decide to go to Ukraine, having that feeling made it so that it could better connect with people. It was a different kind of pain than what they were experiencing, sure. But it was the closest thing that my being can
All
synthesize.
connected to the same vibration. You know what I mean? It really is. So it's like that heartbreak and anguish thing, it doesn't care the degrees or the story. It just is at the core the same thing. You know what I mean? It's that simple.
Yeah, grief is grief, just like love is love, So anyway, I tried to get out of Paris as fast as I could. And I went to Poland where I knew one person, my friend Elsa, who I met at Burning Man one year. She had an Airbnb I could stay at. And, I went out to like a couple of like raves and tried to meet people and told them what my idea was. But point is, I didn't know anybody in Ukraine other than like my guy who I had met in LA, who I was like texting the entire time. But like, it's a war. You're not really going to get the best correspondence from people. But I was still like, it's just so funny because the entire time I'm like, if I go back to LA, I could salvage this romance, but I think I have to go to Ukraine, So at that point, it was like I had no contacts really, other than there was no one was responding to me. So I was just like, fuck it. I'm gonna go. And I was not thinking in terms of a director. I wasn't thinking I'm gonna go and direct a film. What I thought I was doing was going there to find musicians, make like a sizzle reel to like pitch some show later, But when I arrived in Ukraine, by train, by the way, it's a really interesting process because their airspace is closed. You can't fly in there. And something about that makes it so
That
anachronistic
because of the war, or is that just in general?
because of the war. It's controlled airspace. Some of the they're gonna have fighter planes in the sky and deflect missiles, and so it's like you get on these old Soviet era commuter trains, which is it's beautiful in a way, because it's so dreamlike and anachronistic, and like it's a long train ride. For I was in Krakow, Poland, and I took a train from there to the border and then another train, and it's like they're all night trains, so it's like it's hard to explain what that process is like, waking up in this like kind of completely different world than what you're used to, but the process for me was very much like I get to Ukraine, Airbnb still works, that's cool, so I'm able to book Airbnbs. But literally, and I have footage on my phone of this, the first musicians I met were some kids carrying their instrument cases coming off the train, and like I talked to them and like asked them what they were about and told them what my idea was, and they invited me to a show. But I was woefully unprepared. Crazy. Like the fact that I just sort of just did this and just kind of followed an impulse, right? Because yeah, there's certain rules to just existing in a war zone. There just are. And when I got to Kiev, hearing the air raid sirens is something that I just, it's impossible to describe. That classic air raid sound, right?
Totally.
It's not all, you're not always right next to it, so it just sounds like this low, like some cosmic whale song coming from all directions. It's like this really haunting noise, and then you start to hear the anti-aircraft guns and things like that. It's wild, and I didn't know what to do at all. I didn't know what the rules were, But the beautiful thing about it is I learned more the more people I met. I would meet different groups of people, and they would tell me more on how to just get by. But it just got to a point where it became very clear. There was no filming something to pitch. If I was going to make something, I had to do it there and then, because the people might not be there,
How did you meet the girl, or how did you cross paths with her, or how did you hear of her story?
So I had interviewed about 14 different artists. What happened is I knew of one production company in Ukraine, one contact that I knew of. And I just showed up to their offices, and I was like, "Hey, and so I got this idea for a documentary." And the woman there, Christina, who's become a dear friend of mine actually since, and put up with so much of my shit in producing this thing, she was kind of like, "Yeah, so we can't really help you, crazy, like crazy guy who's never made a film before, who's just here. But I know some kids who can help you." And she set up a meeting the next day with my DP, Dre, who's looking amazing. It's crazy because there are so many just world-class artists there whose life had to just stop for this war. And you saw the cinematography in that film. He's amazing,
Amazing, amazing.
So I lucked out. I completely lucked out, right? And so, I have a meeting with them, and I have some money that I had made in Spain, enough to cover like a bare bones production. And they were just kind of like, "Okay, what artists are we going to interview?" And I was like, "I don't know. We're gonna find them." So the process was very much me going out at night to like whatever haunts or speakeasies or concerts, meeting the artists and then interviewing them the next day, between like under martial law. And one point at a coffee shop, the people there told, and there's Tanya, she was my field producer. They're like, "We think that you should see more of the scars of war because, in Kiev, we have pretty good air defense, and we've been, like you kind of are lulled into the sense of security that you're in a regular European cosmopolitan town, and we want to take you to what it was like after. Yeah, of course. Let's see. So, they drove us out to this town called Irpin, which is adjacent to Kiev across the river, and Bucha, which were both sites of horrible massacres and a lot of shelling during the initial invasion. And one site that they took me to in particular was it's like powerful beyond words, and that is the principal location of the film where you see Ina speaking, where with all the wreckage piled up everywhere, the cars.
And that's a, it was a beautiful like background for just some of the shots that where she's playing and stuff. What a powerful background, like whether it was snow or just the cars. I mean, it was just powerful. It's like it just grabs you right away. It was really smart to have that as the background.
Yeah, and they took me there. What that location is it's essentially a memorial site. All those cars were the cars belonged to people who were going to flee the city during the full-scale invasion and were in their cars. They were shot in their cars. A lot of them were able to escape. And then the bridge that they were on to cross was destroyed by the Ukrainian Defense Force in order to stop the armored advance. And so for a lot of people, that place, serves as the only memorial for people that they lost there, and people come and they bring flowers, they bring kids' toys and things like that. So it's a very sacred.
Love the paintings on the cars. I thought that was super powerful. It's just that's the one thing that when I was watching your film, I was like, even when there's darkness, people bring and add light. Like just out of darkness, people add light. It's like it's really powerful to see that. It was just striking to me. It's like you just get it, It's like.
And I would argue especially so during the darkness.
Yes, I would absolutely say so. You know what? Let's play like the first 3 or 4 minutes of this film,
Sure.
and we'll talk about it. But here is, and I want to talk to you about the name too, Kobzarka. Tell us a little bit about the name of the film, Kobzarka.
So the word Kobzarka is the feminization of, or the feminine version of Kobzar. And Kobzars are traditional Ukrainian instrumentalists that play the bandura. And traditionally, they were blind, actually. These musicians were blind. And they used the bandura to sort of tell stories and even during wartime send coded messages. And Ina carries that tradition. So she's a Kobzar, but Kobzarka.
Very cool. Here's the first 3 or 4 minutes of Kobzarka by Gladden Ringel.
Нас з українським народом об'єднує не лише злість, біль, закатовані покоління. Нас об'єднує повітря, любов, цінності. Я зрозуміла, що найбезпечніше місце в Україні біля фронту. Як це пояснити, я не знаю, але ти відчуваєш там безпеку. Мене звати Інна, я бандуристка з Полтави, починаючий композитор. Моє життя до війни і моє життя після війни 100% має зміни, мабуть, в простих речах, які набули сенс, в якихось родинних цінностях. Тому що до війни не було часу на зустрічі, не було часу на ті речі, які зараз для мене є важливими під час війни. Це зустрічі з рідними, обійми, слова, бо ти не знаєш, яке слово, яка зустріч, які обійми можуть стати останніми. Музика до повномасштабного вторгнення я боялася бути собою в музиці, проявляти себе в музиці. Завжди, коли щось починала створювати, в мене думки формувалися, щоб сподобалось комусь, а чи буде слухати це хтось. У мене були якісь мрії, і мої плани, мрії, і життя, воно змінилося, звісно. Зміни кардинальні. По-перше, спочатку вони дуже сильно похитнули і моральний стан, психіку, і прожила, мабуть, всі етапи. Але я стала більш холоднокровнішою. Мені в якийсь момент написав Колі Серга, засновник культурного десанту, військовослужбовець, і запропонував мені поїхати на фронт, співати для військових. І я відмовилася. Страх смерті дуже сильно окутував мене, бо коли ти зустрічаєш війну за кордоном, відчуття загострені.
I mean, just so powerful. It's like, just grabs you right away. Tell me what your concept was to tell the story and to just grip the hearts of anybody that watches it.
So, I toured that location, the one in the beginning, right? And I was like, it would be great to have someone play music here. Well, let's find somebody. And they're like, oh, how about a bandurist? It's like our instrument. I was like, cool, yeah, let's find somebody. This through happenstance, we just happened to hire Ina. Right? And first of all, it's freezing cold. Right? And we show up at that location at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm wearing Doc Martens because I don't understand snow. I'm freezing my ass.
Right.
And this girl's waiting for us on the side of the road. And she's got her big instrument case, you know. And I'm like, all right, we're going to do a wide shot. And then we're going to do whatever. She's going to do a song. I didn't think very much of it, right? That was it. And while the DP was setting up, Ina and I and Tanya, translator field producer, were in the car. Warming up because it's free. It's a different kind of cold in Ukraine. And Ina asks me, she's like, well, what would you like me to play? Something traditional, something classical, something pop. And I was like, well, do you have any of your own music? And she says, yes, I have one song that I've written myself. I'll play that, you know?
Story of the soldier that she...
Yeah.
She basically... Yeah. The story is she met a soldier... And he had nothing to give her except 3 pieces of candy in his pockets. And so he gave her this piece of candy, and she just thought it was the most gracious thing a soldier could do, like in the depths of despair, to give the last pieces of hope of civility that he probably had in his pocket, you know, besides a weapon, you know? So,
And she kept it with her. She kept it with her just in case she ever meets him again.
So crazy.
So that was it. She plays her song. Afterwards, I just decide to interview her, and she tells that story, you know, and it just stuck with me. I've interviewed artists in Ukraine of all statures, of all style, but her story was the most lamental.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, Tim started communicating with me. I was able to get in touch with cultural forces of Ukraine and both film new footage and acquire some of the footage they already had of Ina, be able to tell, I think, a story that was much more elemental to Ukraine.
Right, right.
And more than what I think that, like, I was going to, like, in my head, like, shoot some, like, fucking parts unknown, you know, like, you know. Travel the world, going to the world, you know, whatever the hell it was, you know, but it just immediately, I think, you know, I was so heartbroken and so devastated and like was being physically bummed, you know, I had this come to Jesus moment. Jesus moment when I was in my Airbnb. There's an air raid siren going. I could hear the Shahed drones, like fucking flying lawnmowers, like flying past. And like, I had no willpower to go to a shelter. I was like, if I die, I die. Because in my head, I'm like, what are you fucking doing here? What are you doing here covering this white people's war? Like, you want everybody to like see how fucking brave and smart you are? Like how pathetic. This is just another scheme to earn love is what this is for you. And within that thought, it was like, but this is not about me and I can't make it about me. I'm just a set of senses here to compile something that exists and I just have to absorb it and release it. Like whatever machinery that I have is just a prism to sort of, you know, transmit this light that I'm seeing. And that's how it started. Like, I think I had to be really, really defeated in order to make a good piece of art because I would have got in my own way. So, you know, and what I can say is that I thought it was really important that Ina scored the film. So the idea was that I would have her do studio versions of the same songs that she played on the front line. And since I ended up editing it, I've never edited a fucking film in my life, but like, I tried working with other editors. They didn't know what to do with it. Yeah. So.
You did a great job. You did a great job.
Thank you. You know, it's been, look, man, it's been a journey, learning by trial and error. But I made it so I had to record the same songs that she played on the front line in the same key and tempo so that I can edit the, because my background is I'm in like an Ableton Pro Tools, I'm a DAW guy, right? So I approached film editing the way that I would edit music, you know? And it's like, you realize it's the same, it's all wavelengths, light and sound, you know? And so I was able to translate that in an interesting way, but I wanted to make it so like it was one continuous song. Like the studio version would blend into the live performances. And we hired a violinist who unfortunately passed away during the production. He was a staple in Kiev named Pablo, who would play alongside a guitarist at the Golden Gate in Kiev every single day, rain, snow, or shine. We probably have his last recordings he ever did. Wow. To accompany her. Yeah. So I think that, yes, there was my own intentions, but more so I think how this particular piece came to be, and indeed I think everything that I make from now on is having an art first mentality that I think I had when I was younger, but I had lost in the hustle, you know?
I mean, it's a tremendous film. We're running out of time a little bit, but I wanted to ask you, where can people find this film if they want to watch it?
So, I don't know. Can you just give people my IG or something?
I mean,
it has to.
Yeah, it's on your bio. It'll be on our page for sure.
Hit me up because there's politics. And right now it's in festival circuits. And it's gotten a lot of rejections because it's long for a short, you know.
That's crazy. But that is crazy to me that you've had any rejections. It's such a powerful film. And shame on every film festival. This is like what a film festival is based on. Making a film like this, it's crazy that you've gotten any rejections. That's the politics of a film festival.
Because it's lots of inside jobs. You know what I mean? Like it's lots of who's executive producing your thing. Like, and like more of an obstacle because it is a longer film, you know? So that being said, hit me up. I'm happy to share it. It deserves to be shared. I'm working with an NGO right now to screen the film at cultural centers and universities. Like we might do Stanford, Harvard, Columbia. So who knows if it makes the film festival circuit, but it definitely will be seen in spaces that I think can do good, because that's really what I wanted it to be able to do and to just enable it so I can do more of this work. You know, that's mostly what it's about for me.
Where can people find you on Instagram?
Instagram, at Gladden, Gladden. _sane, like Aladdin sane, like the Bowie album, whatever. You can give the film a follow. It's just kabzarka.film on IG. But hit me up and I will DM you a link to the film because I think ours should be shared. But premiere status is a thing for festivals, so I'm trying not to burn that.
No. You got to do the festival circuit. I was hoping you were submitting it. I've got a festival that you have to submit it to in Portugal, and they will love it. And I'll get you in it because one of my animation projects got in, and I
Really?
love this. I will definitely send it to them. You will be in this film festival for sure, and it's very well respected. So we'll
Awesome.
talk about that afterwards. But check out Gladden's film. It is such a powerful piece of work. It's called Kobzarka, Kobzarka. It will be available at some point on some streaming network, on some distribution network, but for right now, you're just gonna have to wait and watch this interview again for those first 4 minutes, because we just wanted to play a little glimpse of the film. It is tremendously powerful. It is mind-blowing, and it is such a beautiful story about music, humanity, and everything that surrounds war. So, Gladden, thank you for making this film. And I'm saying that because it totally inspired me tonight. It really did. And the second thing is, I hope this leads you to making more films because you are a tremendous filmmaker and storyteller. And if this is your first film, I cannot wait to see what your next movie is. And I really mean that. So thank you for sharing the story and making it because it is powerful beyond measure. It really is.
Well, thank you for saying that. It is tremendous, and it's tremendously inspiring to hear that feedback. And thanks for having me on. It was nice to talk. I feel like I've vented a lot today.
Oh, you know what's cool? It's like you always want to get a perspective on an artist and what they made the piece of work on, and they what they like are inspired by. And it was so interesting to hear the story because the story is so specific, and it's so cool that when you started this journey, it was the opposite of specific. It was like, let me just go here and see what happens. That you're lucky that you found a story that's so specific and powerful because, man, without that intention of like, let me find something so specific, to find something like that is really rare. But I really think the story found you. Like,
100%.
you went there as an open vessel, and it was like the story found you, and it is a powerful film. I'm gonna help you get into at least one of the film festivals that you're gonna love. And it is such a great film festival. But I think you need to release this. No matter if it gets in that 1, 5, 10, 20 film festivals, you need to release this on YouTube. And you have to just create buzz around that because people need to see it. It is so good. And I hope you do that.
Thank you. We'll see how it goes. I gotta detach from the outcome, which is fucking hard to do.
Yeah, that's
That's what.
part of it. It's a. You made the thing, and that is the big reward. And it's like, however it gets received, that's not in your control, and it's not your responsibility. It's just you can do only so much. But I think the bigger thing is, like, people like you need to be making more films and stories. And I think it's important that you start somewhere, and you did. So that is a gift to the world that you gave us. And I really mean that, and I hope that you make more films. And you have an open invitation for any film that you do to come back and be a guest because I just want to share more of what you do because it's tremendous.
We're here to share.
That's
You're
what it
here
is.
to share. I'm here to share. That's it. That's it. That's all.
On behalf of Gladden, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Check out his movie, Kobzarka, Kobzarka. Hit him up on Instagram. He'll give you a link and just wait for it to hit a film festival near you. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and take care of yourselves.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.